have to be incredibly careful. And Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, His Eminence, this divinely appointed immaculate Imam, you know, may Allah shower His blessings upon him. This conversation that he had, I mean, it's like a lifesaver in our present day. If we are listening to speakers who are speaking on behalf of Shaitan, and of course, the film industry is definitely not speaking on behalf of God. It is most definitely speaking on behalf of Shaitan. And you can see this via the different values, or really corrupt values, that the film industry in the mass media is promoting, whether it's alcohol, drugs, guns, violence, sexuality, immorality. I mean, you name it, it is being pumped out by these, you know, film and cinema industry. And if we're sitting and watching these things and listening to these things, and we're starting to realize, you know, that these are promoting and speaking on behalf of Shaitan directly or indirectly, then we are, in essence, worshiping Shaitan, and we are allowing these movies to have some sort of influence upon us. We might say that they don't have an influence upon us, but they surely do. So be very careful to not listen to a speaker who is speaking on behalf of Iblis. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Jawad, alayhi salam.
And now we invite you to listen to Shaykh Winay Keita about Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
Imam al-Jawad salawatullahi wa salamuhu alayhi is an interesting case study for many, many different subjects. So the whole situation was very distressful, horrible situation. Imams obviously were subjected to the nastiest kind of bigotry, racism, and hatred, and ignorance. But yet Allah chose that 2-year-old, 25-month-old at the time, despite whatever color his skin may be, to be in the maqam of the Anbiya and the Mursaleen. Allah chooses where He wants to put His risala and His message and His imam. Not the people. Whether they like it or not is a different issue altogether. Humans have an ability to delude themselves very often. That there's a very fine line between belonging to a group and being deluded by the sense of being in a group. Very fine line. This is what the Imam is showing here. That these are Hashemites. These are Hashemites who've deluded themselves to think, as we see unfortunately in those drawings where there's white, almost blonde, blue-eyed Imams. That's just not reality for many of them. It's not reality. But there is this kind of delusion. I don't know what's going on. It's this kind of it's not even, it was well before colonialism. This has nothing to do with colonialism. Who knows where it comes from? Allah knows best. Who knows really where it comes from? Where this ignorance and, you know, repulsive behavior comes from, and attitude. But it becomes a kind of group delusion. People convince themselves somehow that, you know, that this physical appearance is more attractive than this physical appearance, and this physical appearance is more worthy of respect than this physical appearance. It's a kind of ghurur.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
سید امین عالمی، کابل.
شاهانه بات، ایندین ادمنیسترد کشمیر.
Around the world with reporters.
The right to go on strike, to withdraw one's labor over grievances with one's employer, potentially under threat in proposed legislation that gives the British government sweeping powers to clamp down on industrial action.
They say it's democratic when it's not democratic, so they're an affront to democracy, what they want on this bill. And it'll turn worker, they want to turn worker against worker, but it won't. It'll just cause confusion.
Mr. Speaker.
Formerly known as the Minimum Service Level Bill, voted on in Parliament Monday, the legislation enables the government to determine what a minimum level of service should be, with potential consequences for strikers and the unions that represent them.
Without the unions would face sequestration of their funds, which is obviously a serious, very serious step, and unions can't afford to go down that road. So it will effectively stop strike action in those parts of the economy, but it will also seek to scare people in other parts of the economy about what will happen to them should they take the decision to go on strike.
The freedom to form and join a union and to bargain collectively is one of the four international labor standards which the UK government has signed up to.
The UK is part of the ILO and signed up to all of its conventions. So the right to strike is really a fundamental human right. It's something that we should protect and be very aware of any legislation that seeks to restrict that. And I think, you know, I think internationally people will be concerned that here in the UK we're seeking to restrict that right.
Among the sectors impacted by the legislation, health, education, transport and fire services, all of which have staged several rounds of industrial action over pay and working conditions over the past year, in the face of the UK's cost of living crisis.
Strikes became common during the Industrial Revolution. The UK has recognized the right to strike since at least 1906. And the protesters and union leaders here say they're not going to allow that right to be eroded or taken away. Saeed Foreza, London.
Specialists at the Republican Hospital in Donetsk have warned that the number of civilians who have been hospitalized is dramatically on the rise as Ukrainian armed forces are using more advanced NATO-supplied weapons. Almost 1,000 wounded have been treated since the beginning of 2023, the trauma center in Donetsk has reported. Specialists believe that the latest weapons sent by NATO countries are more advanced and lethal.
Until not long ago, only civilians living near the front line got wounded or killed. Now, following the new medium and long-range weapons provided by NATO to Ukraine, we have a much higher number of civilians being hospitalized. Look behind my back. Our hospital was targeted a few weeks ago.
Ukrainian armed formations have shelled hospitals a number of times over the past months. This hospital in central Donetsk, Voroshilovsky district, was hit by the artillery on April 28. That shelling caused 9 civilian casualties and severe damage to the building. On that occasion, among the dead civilians was also a child. 16 people also suffered injuries from the blast. Kyiv's forces fired high-explosive fragmentation missiles produced in Slovakia and transferred to Ukraine by NATO countries.
We have been denouncing this situation since 2015. We started with the European Court of Human Rights, but for inexplicable reasons, our case was dismissed. We tried then with the International Criminal Court, but they have never visited the Donbass, and this case was subsequently dismissed. We are now trying to bring it forward to the UN. Will human rights be finally protected here as well?
In fear of attacks on residential areas, kids have been forced to switch to remote learning throughout the whole school year, which, by the way, ends on Tuesday. Max Civili, Donetsk.
the 23rd anniversary of the liberation of South Lebanon from Israeli occupation, Hezbollah conducted an unprecedented live military drill in the South Lebanese town of Aramta. After a show of hand-to-hand combat and a parade of all-terrain vehicles and motorcycles, the fighters launched a simulation of taking over an Israeli post in the occupied Galilee area. Over 100 media outlets covered the event, which many say is something unseen since before the liberation in 2000.
The location chosen for this is quite telling. First of all, it's close to the border with Israel. And, of course, this area back in before 2000 was under Israeli occupation. The old Bir Kalab outpost the Israelis had was just up on the hill behind us. So this is very familiar territory for Hezbollah.
The head of Hezbollah's executive council, Sayed Hashem Safieddine, warned Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that his cabinet will not be able to change the rules of engagement.
Our message to Israel is clear. If you think that you can launch a full-scale aggression in order to strike the equations of deterrence, which we made with our blood and armaments and strength, we will be ready to shower you with precise rockets, and you will witness black days unlike any other. The Israeli regime knows what we mean. We will use our precise rockets and all means available to us.
Observers see that Hezbollah is primarily seeking psychological warfare against Israel with this maneuver.
But clearly the message is towards the Israelis primarily. As we've seen with the recent escalation in Gaza, we've seen a tightening of the ties, the military ties between Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and so on. So I think this show today feeds into that.
Hezbollah says the drill sent a message to the Israeli regime about the readiness of the resistance to deter enemy aggression and defend Lebanon. Israeli forces left most of southern Lebanon on May 25, 2000, after 22 years of occupation. Hezbollah's military drill is not merely a show of force with prospects of a possible confrontation and continuous Israeli aggressions towards Al-Quds. Hezbollah wants to send a clear message to the Israelis that its deterrence capabilities remain intact. Mariam Saleh, South Lebanon.
UNICEF representative for Afghanistan says some 90% of the population in the country is on the brink of poverty, while children are the ones who are bearing the brunt of it. The UNICEF states some 2.3 million children in Afghanistan are expected to face malnutrition in the country, while roughly 1.6 million Afghan children, some as young as 6, are trapped in child labor, working in dangerous conditions just to help their parents put food on the table.
The children pick these waste materials and sell it to me. Instead of going to school, they work to earn a bread worth. These kids are doing this job out of necessity because some of them have sick parents and take care of them, or their parents have no job and tell the children to do this for a living. They can hardly buy bread with this earning.
Mohammad Qasem, a 12-year-old worker, says he can't go to a school because he should provide bread for the family.
I am 12 years old. I pick these puddles under the scorching sun to sell and buy bread for the family with this money. I don't go to school because I work every day to earn some money. It has been 3 years that I have been doing this.
Experts believe decades of war and unrest in the country is to blame for the poverty, which is compelling families to send their loved ones on the streets to find a mouthful. But of course, the negative consequences aren't negligible.
Most of the problems in the society originate from poverty. It is due to this poverty that our children are working on the streets. But we should keep in mind that the child who is working on the street is a lost valuable asset without a bright future for the country.
U.S.-led war in Afghanistan has ruined the country's economy. It has also made Afghanistan weapons contaminated too. 134 children were killed or maimed while collecting scrap metal to sell from explosive devices between January and March of this year alone. While Afghanistan is struggling to resolve problems left behind from decades of war, many people here believe U.S. sanctions and the reduction of activities of international organizations have made the situation more complicated in the country. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
The
Islamic Jihad resistance movement has organized a celebration event in Damascus countryside, marking its victory against Israel in the recent battle in the Gaza Strip. In a televised speech, Secretary General of the movement, Ziad Nakhale, announced the victory against the Israeli regime, expressing pride in the people of Gaza, who he said manufactured their own weapons with the help of member countries of the resistance front.
We succeeded in the battle and we preserved Palestinians' unity. We proved to the enemy our continuous readiness to engage in battle after another in defense of our people. Any assassination operation will be met with a strong, clear and painful response in which Tel Aviv or other Israeli cities will be in the range of our rockets.
The event was attended by representatives of Syria-based Palestinian factions. Speakers said Palestinians and resistance groups showed unprecedented unity through the joint operations room while retaliating against Israel. They rejected any concessions with Israel and refused to acknowledge any political settlement with the enemy.
We underline the importance of national unity and armed resistance, which is the only option we have. We reject concessions, Oslo Accords, or any security coordination or recognition of Israel. We call for boycotting Israel politically and economically and punishing the enemy for the crimes against Palestinians.
Videos were played on a large screen showing the retaliatory battle codenamed Revenge of the Free, including images of the Islamic Jihad leaders who were assassinated or lost their lives while confronting Israeli attacks. Resistance movements like the Islamic Jihad believe that resistance is not an option, but in fact a national duty which is based on the legitimate right of Palestinians to fight against the Israeli regime. And for long, it has been the only successful deterrent against Israeli aggressions in occupied Palestine. Hamad Ali, Damascus Countryside.
Just a couple of weeks ago, there were hundreds of refugees, mainly from African and Middle Eastern countries, sleeping on the streets outside the main asylum application centre in Brussels. Authorities have since cleared the area. The refugees have fled to neighbouring countries or have been crammed into emergency accommodation. A few remain in the area, but say their situation would be different if they came from Ukraine.
Only because we are Afghan, because we come from Syria, because we don't have the same color, because we don't have same culture, but it will be not the reason. Of course, a lot of people, we have the same mind. I can work, I can do everything.
When you come here from Ukraine, you get everything. Accommodation, food, work, everything. If you are from somewhere else, as a refugee, you do not get anything.
If you look, I cut also myself, because we don't feel good in camp.
Sometimes you want to die?
Yes, I want to die. You look at my hands, I cut it my hands too much with blades. I do it too much. Because what is it, life, eat and going to sleep?
A debate in the European Parliament has heard that EU nations are erecting borders on land and strengthening aggressive coast guard services at sea. The bloc pays billions of euro to outside countries to stop refugees from attempting to travel here, unless they are from Ukraine.
The EU slogan is, break the business model of smugglers. But what we do is feeding them. By blocking all pathways to protection.
There is a heavy far-right anti-refugee presence in the Parliament.
Europe needs a policy based on strong border control.
But many legislators are calling for a more civilized approach.
We already fund third countries like Libya, actually militias over there, to build camps, to host people there. And we see murder, we see rape, and we do not see a humane solution.
Key EU figures are currently in Hiroshima, Japan, for a G7 meeting. 350,000 people were living there when their closest ally, the United States, dropped its catastrophic atomic bomb in 1945. More support for Ukraine is high on the agenda. Critics say the last thing on their minds is providing refuge to those fleeing countries they helped destabilize in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
For the first time since massive regular protests began in January, the French government has held discussions with union leaders regarding a 2-year hike to the retirement age. A notable problem with that long delay is that the age hike has already been forced into law via a decree by President Emmanuel Macron. Public opinion is overwhelmingly against the change, but the government is standing firm, even though anger is rising to threatening levels nationwide. The First Lady's nephew was recently beaten by protesters over the age hike. Over 60% of the country wants the Prime Minister fired, and neither Macron nor his ministers can appear in public without protesters noisily banging casserole pans.
There's enormous anger right now. Macron has destroyed our social services, given huge tax gifts to the rich, persecuted injustices while allowing the far right to demonstrate without barely any police presence. And this is not even a complete list. People just want to live normally. But the Macron era is one of sadness and poverty.
Unions say the country will not get back to normal unless the age hike is revoked. But France has seen massive anti-government unrest regularly for well over a decade, and usually over far-right austerity measures. France and the European Union continue to be hounded by accusations that they are anti-democratic, and the latest of many French presidential decrees has only further increased dissatisfaction and dissent.
There is growing realization that our major national policies are decided in Brussels, and that our president is a mere puppet. We're also subservient to Washington. Simply look at what we're doing in Ukraine for more proof. So there's no hope that we'll have democracy during the last 4 years of Macron's term. But if we don't get it in 2027, things will explode.
Union leaders left the closed-door meeting, calling it not useful and a one-way monologue. The pension age hike has overshadowed other crises, such as record inflation, the arming of the unrest in Ukraine, and stagnant wages. But all of those remain unresolved flashpoints as well. Barring a surprise reversal from the government, unions are planning a 14th day of nationwide strikes next month. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Hundreds of Orthodox Jews protested outside the UK Parliament building on Tuesday over fears the establishment will begin regulating traditional Jewish faith schools known as yeshivot. Protest leaders made clear they considered any legislation targeting unregulated Jewish religious institutions as anti-Semitic, and they may be forced to flee Britain to protect their religious freedoms from unwelcome reforms.
Today, we face a concerning challenge as politicians attempt to push through a proposed register for children educated outside of school. This is no ordinary bill, but one that seeks to sneak in new laws through the back door under the guise of a private member's bill. This register proposal targets our strictly Orthodox Jewish community, intending to undermine our way of life more than any other group. It reeks of state-sponsored anti-Semitism.
What concerns these religious Jewish parents is regulated British education mandates lessons on lifestyles which contradict Jewish religious beliefs, including relationship and sex education, or RSE, LGBT propaganda, and other anti-religious ideologies, including atheism.
Well, we're not talking about murdering anybody. We're just talking about what we don't want our children to be taught. And we're just following what it says in our religion. And it's absolutely disgraceful that you're not allowed to do that in this country. And that's anti-Semitic.
These protests come after years of public anger expressed by parents, particularly British Muslims, over RSE lessons already being implemented in state schools. Opt-out options are not available, and accusations of indoctrination or anti-religious propaganda being fed to young children has been rife. In January 2023, a petition went viral, gaining over 200,000 signatures, demanding the government remove LGBT teaching from the controversial curriculum. The government responded, saying,
The statutory guidance states that all pupils should receive teaching on LGBT content during their school years. Secondary schools should include LGBT content in their teaching. Primary schools are strongly encouraged and enabled when teaching about different types of family to include families with same-sex parents.
The ruling Conservative government has routinely attacked left-wing opposition over their support for the Palestinian cause and their criticism of Britain's relationship with the Israeli regime. However, and quite ironically, it's now number 10 that finds itself on the receiving end of not only accusations of anti-Semitism, but also Islamophobia and for being anti-religion in general, over an education system which is perceived to be discriminating against religious minority rights. Robert Carter, London.
بالمثير از علوم الشريفية الإسلامية.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
among the holy prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashimi Nejad. Please stay tuned. Once a friend of mine confessed that whenever he needs some money, he wakes up during the midnight to pray to Allah. This is a wrong understanding about midnight salat and the prayer. Our salat must be like that of the late Muqaddas Ardabili, who was looking everywhere for water and a well of water during the midnight to pray solely to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. However, our salat and prayer are for getting answer to our financial needs and not for Allah Himself. Our understanding about salat is really incorrect, and our hands before Allah are empty. If someone evaluates our salat, many of them will not be correct, let alone to be accepted. Our prayers must be like those of Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam. Just look at Sahifat al-Sajjadiyah and how Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam supplicates to Allah. Just look how Imam al-Sadiq did his prayers. He was so much in prostration in prayer that once or twice a year he had to clean away the scars on his forehead. We can't be like the Imams, but we must correct our understanding about Salat. ف Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashim Nejat. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. House of Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene intends to initiate an impeachment procedure against President Joe Biden for failure to fulfill his duties and failure to ensure protection of America's southern border with Mexico. Marjorie Taylor Greene charged President Biden with systematically trying to destroy America since the beginning of his presidency. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. American newspaper The Hill has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, announced plans to file articles of impeachment against President Joe Biden on Thursday, 18th of May, charging he has violated his oath of office in not securing the country's borders and protecting national security. Marjorie Taylor Greene said at a press conference this will be the first set of articles she introduces against Biden, whom she said has purposefully failed to fulfill his responsibilities of the presidency. Greene said, "It is with the highest amount of solemnity that I announce my intention to introduce articles of impeachment today on the head of this America's last executive branch. That has been working since 20th of January 2021 to systematically destroy this country, the President of the United States, Joseph Robinette Biden." Marjorie Taylor Greene made a similar announcement 2 days ago regarding her plans to introduce articles of impeachment against FBI Director Christopher Wray and Matthew Graves, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia. Greene said she has also introduced articles of impeachment against Attorney General Merrick Garland and Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas. The Biden White House called Marjorie Taylor Greene's plan a stunt, noting that President Biden is focused on preventing House Republicans' default that would crash the economy. Ian Sams, White House spokesman for Oversight and Investigation, said Is there a bigger example of a shameless sideshow political stunt than a trolling impeachment attack by one of the most extreme MAGA members in Congress over national security, while she actively demands to defund the FBI and even said she would have been armed and would have won the January 6th insurrection if only she had been in charge of it? The website Politico has also covered this story and tells us more. Marjorie Taylor Greene initially introduced articles of impeachment against President Biden on the first day of his presidency. She also filed articles against Attorney General Merrick Garland in August, following the search of former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago property for classified and sensitive documents taken there. Neither of those advanced in the House of Representatives. The Georgia Republican and ally of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said President Biden has refused to enforce immigration laws and secure the southern border with Mexico, deliberately compromising U.S. national security. She said he has allowed migrants to invade the country while depriving border control agents of the resources and policies that they need to perform their duties. Marjorie Taylor Greene said President Biden has allowed fentanyl to flood into the country and kill Americans every day. She also slammed the administration over its plan to direct Customs and Border Protection, CBP, to release migrants into the U.S. without a set court date or way to track them. Under the plan, migrants need to check in with an app until they're given a court date to appear. Marjorie Taylor Greene said it amounts to catch and release, allowing the migrants to be released instead of being held in custody until their court appearance. She said his policies, directives, and statements surrounding the southern border have violated our laws and destroyed our country. Biden has blatantly violated his constitutional duty, and he's a direct threat to our national security. Article 2 of the Constitution states that the president and other U.S. officials can be removed from office through impeachment and conviction on treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Marjorie Taylor Greene said she wants to take time to gather co-sponsors on her impeachment resolutions. She avoided directly answering a question on what exact charges she would file against President Biden. She said she discussed her plans to file the impeachment articles with other members of the Republican leadership and said they did not ask her not to move forward. She said she is introducing the articles of impeachment because a majority, the base of Republican voters and other Americans outside it, agree with impeaching these officials, describing it as the right thing to do. The Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, has faced intense criticism from many Republicans over the situation with the southern border with Mexico, which experienced a record number of migrants crossing into the United States in recent months. House Majority Whip Tom Emmer, Republican of Minnesota, called for Alejandro Mayorkas' impeachment recently. The British newspaper Daily Mail has also covered this story and tells us more. According to a recent survey, most U.S. voters say Joe Biden has likely committed high crimes and misdemeanors since becoming president that would justify the Democrat being impeached. The opinion poll comes as Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican congresswoman, introduced articles of impeachment against the president over the migrant crisis at the southern border with Mexico. Some 53% of survey respondents said they thought that President Biden had committed impeachable offenses while in office, including 38% who called it very likely. According to a Rasmussen report, that's up 4 percentage points since last November. Rasmussen's top pollster, Mark Mitchell, said negative opinions about President Biden's scandals have definitely been gathering steam. The results were partisan. Republicans see presidential wrongdoing as more likely than do Democrats. U.S. House Republicans are investigating President Biden, his son Hunter Biden, and other family members, charging that they engaged in a cash-for-access bribery scheme with foreign nationals. Those allegations relate to Biden's time as vice president in the Barack Obama administration. Survey respondents were asked about wrongdoing since Biden was sworn into office more than 2 years ago. The pollsters did not specify which misconduct Biden was charged with, but the survey comes as Georgia firebrand Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced articles of impeachment against President Biden over the border crisis with Mexico. Taylor Greene charged the president with refusing to enforce the southern frontier and let 6 million undocumented migrants from 160 countries invade our country. Marjorie Taylor Greene added, Biden has failed to properly supply the guards working the frontier and of letting traffickers smuggle fentanyl and other deadly drugs into the United States. Immigration to the United States has for decades been a divisive issue between Republicans and Democrats, but bigger flows of undocumented migrants in recent years and the lapsing of pandemic-era border restrictions this month have raised tensions further. Also, Marjorie Taylor Greene charged FBI Director Christopher Wray and Attorney General Merrick Garland have turned the FBI and Justice Department into Biden's personal police force to prosecute the administration's political opponents. She said that those who participated in the 6th of January 2021 insurrection were mostly peaceful, but Attorney General Merrick Garland has still pursued them. A bipartisan Senate report found last year that 7 people died relating to the attack on the Capitol on that day. She said she is filing impeachment articles against Graves, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, over his prosecutions of 6th of January defendants, which she said have continued while he has declined to prosecute 67% of people arrested by Washington, D.C. police last year.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile...
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosro Shahi...
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Kadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudin was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher. An introduction into the life and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite dignitaries and fuqaha during the history of Islam. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, I have two very special guest speakers, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani. Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sheikh Fadai, assalamu alaikum to you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about Abdul Hussein Tehrani, mainly known as Sheikhul Araghain, one of the most outstanding fuqaha of the 13th century Hijra. His struggles against Babiyat and Baha'iyat in Iraq was famous,
His struggles for rebuilding the holy shrines of the infallible imams in Iraq was also famous. Let's be more familiar with the early life of Sheikh al-Araghain or Abdul Hussein Tehrani. Sheikh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sheikh Abdul Hussein Tehrani, known as Sheikh al-Araghain. Well, Araghain means Iran and Iraq, because at that time these two part of the Islamic world were called Iraqain, yeah?
Yes.
So that's why he's called, actually he was Sheikh al-Iraq and Sheikh al-Iran, we can say it at that time.
Okay.
So he was born in 1222 and he died in 1286 in the holy shrine of Imam al-Jawad in Kazimiyya. Actually, he died in the Kazimiyya and was buried in Imam Hussein's holy shrine. So about the scholarly life of Sheikh al-Araghain, we can say that he learned the primary Islamic lessons in Iraq, and then he joined the classes or the classes of actually Sheikh Hassan al-Kashif al-Ghita, the son of Ja'far al-Kashif al-Ghita, yes. That who is very well-known scholar in the history of the Shia, particularly in the 13th century. So, and also he attended some of the lessons of Muhammad Hassan al-Najafi, and he was one of the students of Sahib Jawahir. These great scholars that we name,
yes,
each one of them are one of the greatest scholars of Shia in the last centuries. And then actually Sheikh al-Araghain, then he came back to Tehran. He was there after getting his ijtihad from Najaf al-Ashraf. And then, of course, then he became one of the great and very influential figure in Iran at that time, as he was known as one of the Maraja,
yes,
of Iran at that time, at the time of Qajari kings Nasiruddin,
yes,
Shah.
That's right.
And yes, he had lots of, let's say, social and cultural,
yes,
activities.
He was a source of benefit, truly,
yes,
a source of benefit, building schools, building seminaries, finding the grave of Mukhtar, you know, up until his time in Masjid al-Kufa. The exact place of the burial place of Mukhtar al-Saqafi was not known. But in a search and in a consultation with the son of Sayyid Bahrul Ulum, Sharif al-Reza, he could find it, you know. And all in all, his life was really fruitful. Let's talk a little bit about this aspect of his life, Sheikh Fadai, about the socio-cultural and socio-political life of Sheikh al-Araghain.
One of the interesting points in his life is that he had a good relationship with Iran and Iraq, these two nations.
Yes.
And not just the nation and people, but good relationship with the authorities, mm-hmm, of two nations. We can learn from this path of living his life that a real scholar is not the one who just learn and teach, because we believe that Islamic scholars are the preachers of Islam.
Yes.
And Islam is a socio-political religion.
Yes.
So we should be in contact with people.
Mm-hmm.
If I, as a scholar, stay in my home and just learn knowledge and teach it to other people without any relationship with people, so how can I guide this nation? How can I lead them to the correct path? With this good relationship, he could do a lot,
yes,
in his society. Because of that, he was known as Sheikh al-Araghain. If he hadn't this relationship with people and authorities, he couldn't have the power to do that, mm, to affect people.
Yes.
And as we know, he opposed Babi and Baha'i.
Yes, yes, yes. These two important deviated groups.
Yes. You know, at that time...
And what was them? I remember what was Babi and what was Baha'i.
You know, at the beginning, there was a sect called Shaykhiyah.
Yes.
In that sect, they believed that after Imam Zaman, after Imam Mahdi, we should have someone instead of him,
okay,
who is the means of faith and blessing by God. Of course, we believe in Naib Imam Zaman, Naib,
yes,
al-Khas, and Naib al-Haq,
yes, yes, yes,
but not as they say.
Okay.
They believe that this one is someone like Imam.
Mm-hmm. So it is a bab. It is a gate or door. Okay, that's right.
After the main sheikh of that sheikhia sect was dead,
yes.
Someone called Muhammad Ali Muhammad Shirazi.
Uh-huh.
He claimed that I am that bab.
Uh-huh.
I am the gate of Imam al-Zaman.
Okay.
If you want to get the blessing of God, you should
refer
pass
to me.
Through me. You should
yes.
refer for, through me. At the beginning, he claimed that I'm the bab, I'm the gate. After a while, he claimed that I'm the prophet,
oh.
a new prophet. And Islam is done, is expired. I have a new religion.
Yes.
And then after a while, he claimed that I'm God himself. So this is the fake Irfan that we talked about in some
yes.
other programs. So at the time of Sheikh Al-Araghain, they had a lot of activities. And they want to get close to the authorities of Iran and Iraq. And Sheikh Abdul Hussein Tehrani, he used his power and he stopped them. He prevent this relationship. Because
okay.
if they were successful to make this connection between Babi sect and the social and political authorities, they could take over these countries' belief. He used his power and prevent this connection. That was a great step to lead the society. You know, leading is not just something positive that you should
yes.
do something.
Okay.
Sometimes you should prevent some mm-hmm. problems and mistakes. So this is Babi. And after that, Baha'i sect was created
yes.
By Mirza Hussein Ali Nuri.
Yes, yes.
They were
Baha'u'llah, they say.
Yeah, they call him Baha.
Yes, yes.
Yes, and they were derived from Babi
yes,
sect.
Yes.
And again, first he claimed that I'm the Bab of Imam Zaman,
yes.
and then Prophet, and then God, the same way that Ali Muhammad Shirazi.
So Sheikh Al-Araghain confronted all of them.
Confronted all
yes,
of them
yes.
and prevented them
uh-huh.
to be in power.
Yes.
Okay. Unless they could take the power in Iran and Iraq. Not
mm-hmm.
just social power, maybe
yes.
political power.
Yes, yes, yes.
If our audience know, now their centers, both of them, Babi
yes.
and Baha'i,
yes, yes.
is in Israel.
Yes, yes.
In the city of Akka and city of Haifa, if I'm not
yes,
wrong.
Yes,
Haifa and
yes,
Akka.
Yes.
So it means that they had planned for Islam
mm-hmm.
in order to ruin Islam. So this is great scholar and knew that and stopped that.
That's all right.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
And this is truly the role that a Muslim scholar, a Shia Dua, must play in a society in order to defend the Islamic lands. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, what about you? What about any more explanation about his struggles against deviation inside Muslim lands in Iran and Iraq?
Yes, one of the interesting point that could be added here is this, that if you want to know that how much important was the role of Abdul Hussein Tehrani against Baha'ism
yes.
or Baha'i people, we have to look at their works, I mean Baha'i's books,
okay.
Baha'i's works.
Very good.
As it is mentioned in their works, they actually spreaded a kind of hatred literature against him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, lots of, let's say, bad things are written
bad
about
words
bad
against
words
him.
Yeah, against him.
Okay.
It shows that how much important
how
was.
Influential
yeah,
he was.
Yeah,
yes.
How influential he
yes.
was, as he was very much a smart, very clever alim and a scholar that
mm-hmm.
he prevented the king from visiting this one of the leaders of these Baha'is. Because, of course, it would give the Baha'is a good opportunity to spread their teachings. But, of course, this role that he played was really significant. And also, if we look at some of the works written by some of the Baha'is, They used bad words that they used against him.
Okay.
So it shows that he played his
because
role very significantly.
Because he destroyed them. I mean, he demolished the whole lineage of the Baha'is and Babis. Yeah. Over there, by the help of Amir Kabir, of course.
Yes.
We can say the on that time, somehow the first deputy of the Shah, Amir Kabir, was also against Baha'ism and Babism very much that time. That's all right. Okay, it was very kind of you. As we said, Sheikh Al-Araghain was really active and source of benefit for building schools. The rebuilding of the holy shrines of in Atabat Aliyat in Iraq was another outstanding struggle of Abdul Hussein Tehrani, mainly known as Sheikh Al-Araghain. About his demise, it is mentioned that it was Ramadan 22nd, 2086, according to the Hijri calendar. He passed away in the city of Al-Kadhimiyya, but his wife was taken into the holy shrine of Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam, Sultaniya Gate, and he was buried over there. This was the life account of Abdul Hussein Tehrani, mainly known as Sheikh Al-Araghain. We said that he was called Sheikh Al-Araghain because he was, on that time, Iran and Iraq were called the Iraq of Ajam and Arab, okay? Two Iraqs, so he was called Sheikh Al-Araghain. He was a source of benefit and a blessing for the both countries on that time. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai.
You're welcome.
And Sheikh Rouhani for a nice elaboration. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information on this program and to download for free our previous episodes of the program, The Teacher, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all.
We once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures. Oh Allah, we've shamed ourselves, we've strayed from Al-Mu'allim. Surely we've wronged ourselves, what will we say in front of it? Ya Mu'allim, peace be upon you, truly you are our teacher. Mu'allim, teacher of all mankind. To be just and kind, and to feed the poor and hungry, help the wayfarer and the orphan child, and to not be cruel and miserly. His speech was soft and gentle, like a mother stroking her child.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up,